Class is about to start for these 40 school kids. Like every week, the teacher starts searching everyone's pockets. This time, he finds something on a little girl. 5 kernels of grain. The teacher snaps and commands the girl to come up front. She has to kneel down on the hard concrete floor. With a wooden stick, he strikes her on the head. Again, and again, and again, and again. Her classmates watch in silence. The beating goes on until the little girl collapses. Afterwards, her classmates carry her home. The same night, she dies. The little girl and the other 39 children are all inmates in one of North Korea's deadliest prison camps, Camp 14.
Comparisons have been drawn to the Nazi death camps, to the Soviet gulag. You know, they're accurate, and in their own way, they're different.
A lawless detention facility hidden in the mountains of Kaishan, a place where people are imprisoned for the crimes of their parents. Once you end up here, you will most likely die here.
This is truly a space that is outside humanity, let me say that.
Prisoners are forced to work under inhumane conditions. The smallest mistake can cost them their lives. Escape is almost impossible. Only a handful make it out, risking everything on deadly routes. In North Korea, there are several of these death camps, and the regime has kept them a secret for decades. But through the relentless work of human rights organizations, satellite imagery, and reports from survivors, we can have a glimpse at these facilities. Why are people being sent to Camp 14? What does daily life look like inside its walls? What horrors do the inmates face? And how do people actually get out? This is the story of the most horrific prison camp in North Korea.
Burn.
This story is based on escape from Camp 14 by Blaine Harden. One former prisoner of Camp 14 later changed parts of his story. Every time you see this symbol, it marks those revisions. If you want to know more about the exact changes and the reasons behind them, we recommend reading this article. Since North Korea denies the existence of these camps, independent verification is not possible. Shin Dong-hyuk is just a young boy when he witnesses the little girl being punished for having food in her pocket. Shin has no doubt she deserved it. After all, she stole food, and in Camp 14, stealing means death. He doesn't question it. He knows nothing else. The camp rules are his reality. Shin was born in Camp 14, but his parents didn't fall in love. They were assigned to each other by prison guards. Intimacy between men and women is strictly forbidden. If a woman becomes pregnant without permission, both she and the baby are shot. In Camp 14, there is only one way to have a child: promotion. Those who work hard, and more importantly, snitch on others, may be granted a reward marriage. This is how Shin Dong-hyuk and his older brother Shin Hee-gyun come into the world. But they don't grow up as a real family. Their mother never talks about the past. Shin has no clue why his parents were imprisoned, and it probably wouldn't matter anyway.
It's all about suspicion. You know, you don't have to be an anti-regime character. But if you're suspected of being anti-regime, of being a wrongdoer, a wrong thinker, of having engaged in wrong associations, they will send you to the camp.
This is Greg Scarlatoyu. He's president and CEO of HRNK, the Washington-based Committee on Human Rights in North Korea. For years, Greg and his team have been investigating human rights abuses at these camps. Like many others, Shin will most likely stay in Camp 14 for the rest of his life, even though he never committed a crime. This is the house Shin and his mother live in. Along with his mother's promotion came slightly better housing. They share it with 3 other families and sleep on the floor. There is a single light bulb in the kitchen. Electricity works for just 2 hours a day. There's no running water, no furniture, no shower, and barely enough food to survive. The building is part of a model village, one of many. Camp 14 is estimated to cover around 153 square kilometers, almost 3 times the size of Manhattan. It is secured by a 60-kilometer fence, patrol paths, barracks, guard posts, and checkpoints. The whole area stretches from river valleys to mountain peaks. The wilderness and the Taedong River act as a natural barrier, an immense obstacle course separating the facility from the outside world. Little villages are scattered across the vast area, containing housing and working units.
These are sprawling facilities. They're very large facilities. So at some of these facilities, you see farming, agriculture going on. You see some of these facilities that are adjacent to coal mines or other types of mineral exploitation.
Researching and animating topics like these take a lot of time. We worked for months on just this video with the help of more than a dozen people. And this wouldn't be possible without our sponsor, Brilliant. Brilliant is an interactive learning app and the best way to become smarter, quicker. It provides thousands of lessons in math, science, data analysis, AI, programming, and more. You can pick up lessons anytime you want on your phone or computer. This makes learning a part of your everyday life. We really like Brilliant's scientific thinking course. It develops your scientific intuition by exploring the basic principles of physics through playful and interactive puzzles, helping you think like an engineer and see the world in a new way. It's hands-on, efficient, and easy to grasp. To start learning for free, go to brilliant.org/fern, scan the QR code, or click the link in the description. Get a 20% discount on annual premium subscriptions, which gives you unlimited access to everything Brilliant offers. The camp has its own railroad network and generates its own electricity. And it also has a school. This is where Shin goes every day. His teacher wears a guard's uniform, carries a weapon, and teaches obedience above all else. Camp rules are brutal. There are 10 of them. Even the smallest violation can lead to execution. Shin memorizes them all. Rule 1. Any witness to an attempted escape who fails to report it will be shot immediately. Rule 3. Anyone who steals or conceals any foodstuffs will be shot immediately. Rule 5. Anyone who holds or hides a fugitive's possessions, conspires with him, or fails to report him will be shot immediately. The guards enforce the rules without mercy. Across North Korea, there are different types of detention facilities. The worst of them are called Kwanliso. Camp 14 is one of them. It's also called a total control zone.
People never get out of those. You know, they just waste away. They get killed by this vicious cycle of malnutrition and forced labor.
Shin's mother has to work the rice fields, 10 to 15 hours of hard labor every day. If she meets her quota, she receives food, just enough to survive the night and make it through the next day.
North Korea is all about production targets. If you don't meet them, and probably you will not meet them, you'll get less food, more work, less food, more work, and that's how you waste away and die. That's, you know, the truly tragic story at these camps.
From the moment Shin starts school, his life is split between the classroom and hard labor in the coal mine. Long work days are made worse by a constant gnawing hunger. Before school, Shin often eats his mother's portion while she's still out in the fields. She beats him for it, but he does it anyway. To him, she's not a source of love or care. She's a rival in the fight for every meager scrap of food. This is Shin's meal, served 3 times a day for his entire prison life. If he makes a mistake, his portion is cut in half as punishment. Sometimes he and the other inmates catch rats, the only source of meat in Camp 14. For Shin, this isn't as much as a nightmare. It's normal life. He has never seen the world beyond the barbed wire. Unlike this man. Kim Young is in his mid-40s when he's brought to Camp 14. He knows the world outside very well. In fact, he was a high-ranking military officer and vice president of a state-owned company. In his former life, he enjoyed culture, a chauffeur, and all the benefits of being a government employee. Now he's also forced to work in the coal mines. Kim didn't break any laws to get here. His parents did. In North Korea, this form of collective punishment is called yunjoje, guilt by association. Up to 3 generations can be punished for crimes of family members. When Kim was a child, his father and brother were accused of spying for the United States, enough to execute them. After that, Kim was brought to an orphanage under a new name. It took more than 40 years until someone found out about his true heritage. Even Kim himself wasn't aware of the supposed crimes his family allegedly committed.
There's absolutely no judicial process. This is extrajudicial punishment. They'll just, you know, take you away in the middle of the night, together with your family members. You just disappear. That's how it goes.
대낮에 잡아가는 건 없어요. 다 밤에 그냥 원래 그냥 나 어느 순간에 와서 싹 다 쓸어 가고 정치범 수용소에 가서도 그 가족들은 우리가 뭘 잘못해서 왔는지 그걸 모른다는 거죠.
Fear is the most powerful tool for prison guards to keep inmates in line. During Kim's time in Camp 14, a total of 25 inmates are executed. One day, he witnesses a fellow prisoner being killed for collecting chestnuts that had fallen from a tree. Kim spends most of his days underground, hours and hours of endless work with no sunlight and no mercy. Kim struggles. He's never faced labor like this before. Mistakes are inevitable, and every one of them is met with the punishment of a guard who never leaves his side. One day, a guard strikes Kim with the butt of his gun till he falls unconscious. For the next 2 days, he only receives half his meals. After more than 2 months of living like this in Camp 14, Kim decides to end it. Following a long day of work, he steps into the elevator of a mining shaft. The metal cage ascends until it reaches a height of around 2,000 feet. He pulls the safety pin, and the elevator falls. But Kim survives, and the vicious cycle goes on. When Shin is about 6 or 7, the camp's borders shift. His village is merged into the neighboring Camp 18, just across the river. It's said to be slightly less brutal than Camp 14, but for Shin, life hardly changes at all. Shin is 15 and has moved out from his mother's home. He now lives with his father. One day, a teacher allows Shin to spend the night at his mother's house, a reward for good behavior. When he arrives, another guest awaits. It's his brother, Shin Hee-gyun. The 21-year-old works at the prison cement factory, a couple of miles away. Shin doesn't like him at all. In the middle of the night, Shin wakes up from his sleep. He hears voices from the kitchen. His brother is talking about escape. His mother seems to support him. Shin's first instinct, he has to report this. He goes to a nearby dorm room and wakes a friend to ask for advice. The friend urges Shin to tell the guards. They go to the school's night guard on duty and report the escape plot. Shin also signs a false police statement, claiming he saw his mother and brother commit murder. This piece of evidence ultimately leads to an execution order. The guards take Shin to an execution site next to the Taedong River. A crowd has gathered to watch. They drag out his mother and his brother. They're killed in front of Shin's eyes. In 1996, Kim Young is transferred to Camp 18. To him, this place feels like heaven. The labor conditions are slightly better, and to his surprise, he reunites with his 70-year-old mother, who is also a prisoner here. But the violence and abuse don't stop. One day, he has to witness how guards beat up his mother and force her to do manual labor. His mother is certain they will both die in the camp. Even though it means risking his life, she urges Kim to leave her behind and escape. Escaping from a North Korean death camp is almost impossible.
You know, these are highly protected facilities. You're talking barbed wire, walls, armed guards, intersecting lines of fire. We're talking machine guns. Very, very difficult to escape. I mean, it's, you know, difficult to escape a detention facility in any civilized country. You know, imagine North Korea.
Kim Young quietly studies his surroundings. He observes, waits, and starts thinking. He lays out multiple escape plans, but none of them seem doable to him. Another hard day of work. The prisoners are loading coal onto a train. Suddenly, they spot something. Grain scattered across the bottom of a train car. It must have transported food before. The scene explodes into chaos. Prisoners drop everything, desperately looking for the tiniest speck of food. The guards start shouting, but no one listens. Kim discovers a narrow space beneath a metal panel in the floor of a coal wagon. He squeezes inside, and as the train rumbles out of Camp 18, he rides with it. Hours later, the train reaches Gohan Station at around 4 a.m. We don't know exactly how, but Kim manages to crawl out of his hideout and disappears into the night. Kim successfully escaped Camp 18, but his path to freedom is still very long. After finding a worker's uniform, he changes clothes and starts a treacherous journey that will take him many months through China and Mongolia to South Korea, where he'll eventually seek asylum. Escaping a prison is one thing. Escaping the country is another. We made a whole video on how to escape North Korea. Link is in the description. Shin also manages to escape from Camp 18 twice, both times by crawling under a fence. Both times he's recaptured. After his second attempt, Shin is sent back to Camp 14 and is thrown into a special detention center, a place with only one purpose: torture.
I still have the scars of my torture and the burns. Look at my arms. My arms aren't normal. They are bent and deformed. Before I was tortured, my arms were straight. When I was tortured, my arms were tied up with a rope and pulled backwards. That made them more and more bent. I'm filled with anger when I stand in front of the mirror and look at my body after a shower.
After 4 weeks of torture, he's thrown into a pitch-black cell, no windows and barely enough space to lie down. There, he'll spend the next 6 months. After his release, Shin is thrown back to the general prison population. He has to work in the coal mine, the farm fields, and eventually in a garment factory. This is where he meets Park Young-chul, a man unlike anyone Shin has ever seen. Born into an elite family, Park once held a prestigious job and had seen the world beyond North Korea's borders. By then, Shin already knows he's on the execution list. With Park at his side, he begins planning what will be Shin's third and final escape. Shin and Park are assigned to do some woodwork up in the mountains, along with some prisoners. They're chopping wood near the outer fence. The camp's fence is around 10 feet high and lined with high-voltage barbed wire. The next guard tower is a quarter of a mile away. Shin watches the patrols. There are long gaps between them where no guard is close enough to spot the two. The plan is simple. Wait until dusk so that their footprints can't easily be traced in the snow. They slip through the high-voltage wires without touching them. As the sun sets, Shin and Park move closer to the fence. They hack branches, pretending to stack wood. Nobody notices them. Park hesitates. Shin's heart races. He grabs Park's hand and they run. Shin slips. Park reaches the fence before him. He tries to squeeze his head between the two lowest wires and hits one of them. Park's body is not moving. The bottom wire bends under his weight, creating a narrow gap. Shin crawls over Park's body. He is almost past the fence when his legs slip, hitting one of the wires. The voltage tears through him. His pants char. His skin burns from ankle to knee. But somehow he makes it through. Park's body lies dead on the fence. Shin runs without looking back for 2 hours straight until he realizes that he made it. He manages to cross the river to China, and after a journey of almost 2 years, he finally reaches South Korea. These are all the prison camps that are most likely active in North Korea today. According to Greg Scarlett-Toyu, the camps are changing, and not for the better. Camps near the border have reportedly been moved further inland, likely to make escape even harder. And some new internal perimeters have appeared, possibly to isolate high-value prisoners.
A third development in terms of infrastructure, evolution and development has been the creation of watchtowers and what appears to be intersecting lines of fire around the camps that would be meant to basically exterminate those who attempt to leave those camps.
For some camps, evidence is even scarcer.
There is one camp that we know very little about, and that's Camp 16-16. That's very close to the Punggye-ri nuclear testing facility. And I've spoken with the South Korean nuclear scientists who said, look, we don't believe that prisoners are used in digging those tunnels for the nuclear tests, but it is very likely that they will be, used and abused while cleaning up after those nuclear tests.
The HRNK estimates that up to 120,000 people are currently held in North Korean prison camps. In fact, as a viewer of this video, you might know more about them than most North Koreans ever will.
We have to remember that these people are being tortured and maimed today. They were tortured and maimed yesterday, and the same will happen tomorrow. So, you know, I think it's a matter of moral, ethical, religious, and political obligation to continue to maintain our interest in these issues.
This is Shin today. He gradually adjusted to a life in society and became a public speaker and advocate for human rights in North Korea. In 2015, Shin Dong-hyuk retracted parts of his story and admitted to changing certain key details in Escape from Camp 14. The book's author published a detailed statement outlining every change Shin had made. According to Shin, some memories were simply too painful and others too shameful to share truthfully at the time. This is a common reaction for victims of torture, who often cope by suppressing or distorting their accounts of what really happened. Greg Scarlatoyu and others believe Shin's changes don't alter the fundamental truth of his reports.
Was Shin Dong-hyuk a political prisoner? Yes, 100%. Okay, he spent some time both at Camp 14 and Camp 18, right across the river. Did he witness the execution of his mother and brother? Yes, he did. So the fundamental elements of Shin Dong-hyuk's story did not change.
Shin bears the scars, physical and psychological. They leave little doubt about the abuse and torture he endured.